Three, two, one, go.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Triad of the Forest podcast, a podcast from three Puerto Rican friends coming together to do deep dives into Star Wars and other nerd-related media. This is our season two, episode 30. Good for us. And today, we're going to be wrapping up what we started doing when we were doing three episodes of What If at a time. We kind of never got around to concluding that because then Visions came out and that, you know, collectively blew our minds. And so we started focusing on that. And my opinion, we'll obviously get to it. Those last three episodes were kind of blah, in my opinion. So I guess we just didn't get to them because we were focusing on Visions. And then so we'll quickly wrap up What If and then start talking about all the goodies we got from the DC fandom. So today's gonna be like a Marvel versus DC sort of episode.
No, there's no versus. That's the good thing that we have to, we can Marvel just like them both equally, except Marvel Plus, because DC is not doing so hot, so they're just a plus after Marvel. But it's not a competition. It's all good. The only competition really is in the real world with some of the issues that are plaguing us. Those are things that we should really take a stand on. But I digress. Episode 30. They say that the 30s are better than the 20s. I don't know. I just turned 33 a couple of weeks ago. I don't know if I agree with that sentiment. But hopefully in podcasting.
It's so far so good.
I don't know. My back hurts. It's been terrible. But hopefully in podcasting terms, 30s is going to be a good omen. So I'm looking forward to that. But in other news, though, it's not just Marvel and DC today. It's a congratulations to Nani, who fulfilled the prophecy that Mo and I predicted a couple of weeks ago. That's of her breaking the curve. She did, in fact, break the curve. Got 108 on her super difficult law exam. So congratulations, Nani. All that studying really paid off.
Thank you.
Humbleness prevails.
Well, and obviously, thank you for, you know, being able to find people to talk to other than me and, you know, run with the show whenever I'm not available to show up. So obviously.
We're too tumbled through the show, but. We're glad to have you back.
Yes, it's definitely not the same without you. So we're glad to obviously have you back on the team, and not just that, but have you succeed, at your study. So that's always a good thing. Personal life is more important than podcasting life.
Yes. Well, thank you very much. So aside from all that good news, thank God, I mean, a lot of stress has left my body. What did we think about those three last episodes of What If, starting with What If Thor Were an Only Child, which I like to refer to as the Party Thor episode.
Party Throw?
So, Vegas Thor.
Vegas Party Thor. I don't know. There's some way to turn that into a bro pun. It was okay. Like, it was weird because it came off from that, you know, from that series of dark episodes where everyone was dying and everything was dark. All of a sudden, it's just like bro Thor having a party and just trying to not get caught by his mom, kind of a Ferris Bueller's Day Off type of thing, but in the Marvel universe, which fun, but that's it. It was fun. Didn't blow my mind. Didn't rock my world, didn't change any paradigms and storytelling for me. It's a solid 7, I think. It's enjoyable, but nothing to write home about, I think. I don't know if you guys found it transformative, but I did not.
What about you, Mo?
I mean, if there was anything transformative about it, is the power of, mothers. Even the one of the strongest Avengers with capacity to control thunder and bring forth all the might of Midgardian, like scared of mom. I mean,
moms always say that they're witches, but in this case, it's actually true. Frigga, she's got some powers. We don't know
look, everybody was like, when Thor mentioned like Frigga was coming, everybody was like, oh lord. It's like, mom, it's almost like mom transcends, everybody. Like at that moment, Frigga was everybody's mom. Like,
like, oh,
It's like, Mother Frigga, oh no, we're all in trouble.
So I respect that aspect of the episode, that, you know, kudos to moms, all moms out there, you know, we love you.
Oh, definitely.
To all the Friggas.
And it's like, you called my mom? Betrayal.
but I guess it was the right thing to do.
It was the right thing.
So yeah, it definitely didn't blow my mind. It was cute, you know. There were some really good cameos, obviously Jeff Goldblum as the Grandmaster, and you know, the awesome kind of, you know, integration of the Ragnarok soundtrack was great, and Marcy is always is fantastic. More of her every day.
And Loki as a frost giant, I think, was really cool. Actually,
that was really cool. That was like, and the fact that they just froze also.
And not only that, the fact that because they didn't get raised together, they're like BFFs.
Yeah, now, they actually like each other, honestly.
And then and obviously I said the name wrong. It's Darcy, not Marcy. God. Darcy, and then Darcy marrying, you know, Howard the Duck, you know. There were some moments there, but considering that this is like the last three and we'd already been building up with like things that really, really changed the stories and stuff, I was like, oh, it's fun, it's cute, but okay.
You know, like after watching the whole series, I wonder if that episode could have been replaced by something with Gamora.
Fun fact, now that you mention like, there's a lost episode.
Okay. Maybe the whole Gamora thing?
Yeah, because of COVID, I was reading we'll get to it in a little bit, that everyone saw, you know, Gamora with Thanos' armor and stuff.
Yeah.
There was supposed to be an episode that explained what happened, but because of COVID, they couldn't finish that episode. So that episode's going to be pushed to season two of What If. But you are correct, Mo. That episode was indeed in the cards because, yes, this whole Gamora thing is just like, what the? What? It's like, where did you come from?
Gamora ex machina.
and Tony Stark with the Hulkbuster armor the trash planet from Jeff Goldblum's markings that the Hulk had when he was there in Ragnarok.
Yeah, like, which
I wanted to hear that.
Which
story.
In that one episode when the last one, when the Grandmaster goes to pick her up, it's just like, wait, this is interesting. Why am I not getting more of this?
Why exactly?
Yeah. Something that was really weird to me was that Natalie Portman did not sound like herself at all.
Wasn't Natalie Portman doing the...
That's what it says in the credits, that Portman.
She was credited as...
Interesting.
So I was very confused because the whole episode, I was like, that's not Natalie Portman. Like, Chris Hemsworth obviously was him, and Tom Hiddleston, and Darcy, Kat Dennings, and almost everybody else. Obviously not Frigga, but... I don't know. It was super weird. I was like, there's no way that's Natalie Portman. And then it turns out that it's her. But
hey, some people just, you know, sound weird, I guess, when they're... I don't think she does a lot of voice work. I could be wrong.
Or it could be kind of like to that Brigitte episode. Like, they were, you know, recording on their closets at home because of COVID. So
that's right.
You know, possible.
That could be it, you know. Mm-hmm. Maybe Natalie Portman has a bunch of ducks outside and she has in the closet, and that's how.
Plus, I mean, as we've discussed before, like, Benicio del Toro for sure did not sound like himself. So sometimes when you're voice acting, it's not the same thing.
Yeah, Benicio del Toro is someone that definitely recorded from their bathroom. He's just like, I don't got time for this. I want to get paid, but I don't got time for it. I'll do it while I shower.
and then somehow the character got the anime makeover.
Definitely.
I guess that...
I think one of the biggest problems with the episode is that then you have the end, which is like, it obviously leaves you in that cliffhanger of Ultron coming in, but then it totally takes away from the drama of the episode that comes next, because you already know that Ultron's going to figure it out and start crossing the multiverse. So it kind of takes away all the expectations that you're going to get when you get to the next episode. That is, what if Ultron won? And then you're like, well, we already know what happens. He's going to cross the multiverse. So that ending in the Thor Prince, Party Prince episode kind of ruined the upcoming episode. or that's just kind of what it felt like to me. So I don't know.
I don't know. I think it's cool that they redid Age of Ultron, right? Kind of like, okay, let's take one of the weakest Avengers villains and rework him to be like the uber villain, even though like I think they went really way too far in my opinion. It's like, holy crap, this guy's like stronger than Thanos and the Watcher. He's like he's stronger than Ego apparently now that he's like a synthesoid made of vibranium with all the Infinity Stones. I was like, holy crap, it's a Superman problem. Like how do you defeat the most powerful being in the universe? Like it's like you have to use a Deus Ex Machina type thing to be able to defeat it. But besides that, it's just how the series was structured for me was not conducive to this type of ending because each episode felt so contained and such like an anthology series that all of a sudden she's like, oh, well, here we go. I'm just plopping people out from these episodes to just,
we're doing the Marvel thing.
to do the Marvel's camera circle around the Avengers shot thing that kind of felt cheap in my opinion, because if you were going to connect it at the end, I feel that there should have been like more connectivity and purpose to the characters that ended up making the Guardians of the Multiverse, which awesome name, by the way. But I don't know. It's because of that, it just the end felt cheap for me. It's just like, okay, no, we have to have the team up because this is Marvel and we have to team everybody up. And obviously our guys have to win. So like, I don't know.
I know. I actually felt the same way. I liked the fact that they were all kind of, you know, self-contained in their own thing. And then you can think about all the possibilities that could happen. Some of the stories that you might want to continue or something, but then that whole, you have been chosen. Right. And just you know, doing the Marvel thing, it's like it just like slap in the face, like really, you're just, this is how you're ending this like awesome thing that you're doing about multiple possibilities and blah blah blah, and you're just doing another end game but with different versions of the characters, because you know that's basically what they did. So and the whole overpowered Ultron thing, it didn't make any sense to me, because you kind of already established in Loki that the Infinity Stones are not that powerful if taken like beyond your own and then
I mean, but that type of thing I'm willing to overlook because it's like, whatever, it's magic stones, it doesn't exist, so like I'm like, whatever, those type of things I'm willing to forgive, because as long as it doesn't contradict the story within the story it's telling, I can forgive that there's no continuity to the broader universe because, okay, it makes sense in this story. Fine. You know, it doesn't, the overarching thing, but as long as this story makes sense, I'm willing to forgive it. I'm not that much of a nitpicker for canon as like some people are in the collective, you know?
I know. And I agree. It's just, I don't know, something about it was just like, ugh, it's too overpowered. It's too ridiculous. It's too, I don't know. You kind of lost some of the magic that you get from some of those individual episodes, like the T'Challa Star-Lord, even though, you know, we get him back, but you lose some of the magic from it. Also the Doctor Strange one, which I thought it was great that it ends up that he's the first one that the Watcher reaches out to. Because it's the only one so far that had been aware of him. And I like how you actually end up, you know, finishing Doctor Strange's arc, because he has to be like this watcher of like the solution of these two people trying to fight over the Infinity Stones as like penance for what he did. But he was already locked by himself somewhere else, like completely alone, which I think it's worse kind of punishment. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Some of it kind of, I got to that last episode and I was just like, I don't know why they did that. They should have kept it, you know, its own thing. I don't know.
But we'll see. I mean, now because of Loki, since all of this is part of the multiverse of the live action stuff too, I'm curious to see if there's going to be any crossover from like the What If show into either Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness or Spider-Man or any of these shows and movies that are going to be directly touching the multiverse. Because otherwise I feel like, well, then what's the point of doing this if it's not going to, you know, we're not going to
connect,
go back
all,
and cross everything. But, you know, Marvel knows what it's doing. Like, I every time I doubt it, they come out with the next thing. It's just like, ah, Kevin Feige, you pulled the trigger and you stuck the landing. Yeah. So we'll have to see. Maybe this is a like an Iron Man type of thing where you have to wait 10 years for the payoff. And then you'll get the Avengers and it's like, oh, Lord. We'll see. But for now, What If was a fun little show. I enjoyed it. I think it's like a 7 or an 8 in my book. But at least the ending for me kind of lost steam and just didn't do anything too special. It was just, you know, spectacle. Yeah. Fun spectacle. I enjoy spectacle, but nothing. They didn't say anything new to me anyway. So I'm looking forward to what the future holds in other universes, you know, maybe not the Marvel one, but definitely in the friendly rivalry with DC. DC seems to be doing its own multiverse.
Before we jump to DC, I wanted to say that everything that you both said is what actually... It just adds to how fascinating I thought the ending of it was.
Really?
Interesting.
Because
you enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah. Because the story was never about the what ifs. This is the story about the Watcher.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's a two-sided story because we are part of this multiverse. You have to, it's the moment the intro goes. It's I'm going to guide through this like fast new realities. So these are the realities that are completely in existence after the effect of Loki. So once that happens, all of this happens simultaneously. So the fact that it happens simultaneously, if the Watcher just was the Watcher, you wouldn't be narrating. So the fact that the Watcher started narrating was probably what led to the disintegration of the multiverse that will eventually weaken the walls that will permit Ultron to break through them.
So it's just that moment that even the Watcher asks, he's narrating.
It's the Watcher narrating. Mm-hmm. That's what weakens the multiverse lines. That's what permits Ultron to break through them. Because then that every iteration of it just adds another version of that multiverse. So now we are aware of it. So the fact that we are aware of it breaks the Watcher's universe. It actually creates a splinter reality, which makes what Ultron is saying like, oh, it's a multiverse. So there exists a way in which I can break into this, your universe. And to me, the only, I love Marvel because of the multiverse. That was the whole concept of
it.
It's the quintessential Marvel thing. You know, you go back, you change some variables, and then all of a sudden you have a different story. And seeing that each universe was unrelated in its way, but at the same time, you know, the Watcher was like, okay, F it, I need you, I'm gonna intervene. This is just it's one of those things that just gets you thinking, like, what if it happens to you? What if something comes out of nowhere, tells you, hey, you want
to
come?
You have to do this.
Like, what up? And you end up abandoning it because it's kind of like that ending when, like, Natalia was saying, like, oh, we're all stories. But those stories are intrinsic. That is the whole multiverse. That is the reality. It's just a story that's unfolding. So in a beautiful way, it's the story gives reality and the reality gives the story, so it's like a continual cycle. And that's why I loved how it all ended and came to be.
I mean, it's interesting because I do appreciate the repercussions and the consequences of having the multiverse, which was obviously explored first with Loki, and we'll get to see like how, you know, it affects everything else, which is why I was a little more hopeful in for the show in a sense, because I thought the show was gonna like explore it in a different type of way, because even though like I understand like how like what you're framing, Mo, but I don't know, I still felt that for how expansive it could have been, it still felt very contained. because these splinter realities or separate parallel universes of each individual story, I didn't see why the Watcher was justifying to himself that those were the ones that he needed to, you know, unite them into a battle with this. Galactus now, Jesus Christ, against this Ultron. I felt there needed to be like some, you know, more mesh into like how these multiverses were kind of poking at each other, affecting it, so that those particular heroes had to be the only ones that could have been recruited.
But you see, I don't think those were the only ones that could be recruited. Those were the only ones that the Watcher had told the story about. Ergo, those are the only ones he has access to, because those are the only ones he broke the multiverse. Apart from it, multiverses never interact. Mm-hmm. That is, like, even if we are right now in a multiverse, there's no way of knowing it. So there has to be an entity, the Watcher, that weakens whatever is between the universes, and it has to be completely random, because, you know, we cannot be aware of it. So then you add the fact that in whatever multiverse, you know, there's still all Avengers. So given the option of, hey, you gotta save the fate of the whole multiverse rests in your hand, they're all gonna say, okay, yes, like Avengers. It's in their nature as well. So, yeah, like, so. That's where I see the cleverness. I see your point. I'm just that's where the cleverness of it is. It could have been a completely different Avenger. This just happens to be the ones the Watcher told the story to us, which are the ones he could eventually then interfere into.
Yeah, and the fourth wall. Yeah.
And then the first one that they go to is Dr. Strange, because Dr. Strange was completely aware of this
being, of the Watcher and everything,
and was in a self-contained universe of its own. So and then then you add on top of that now on a separate universe, there's a tiny universe
as a prison.
So it's like very Men in Black with the marbles, and like,
where the Earth is in the Earth is in the galaxy is in the Earth, even though the Earth is in the galaxy. Mobius strip.
That's how it works.
That's how it works. But there was also, I think, an element of like foretelling, because clearly at the end, like, Doctor Strange is like, you knew that there was going to be betrayal. You knew this was going to happen. So I think he also chose it for a reason, because he knew how they were going to. It was people that he was interacting with that he had narrated their lives. So it was very intimate to the Watcher. So he could foretell how they were going to act. Like, he could foretell that Killmonger was going to be a betrayer and like all these things. So, and I did like the whole, we didn't have to win. We just had to get the stones away. And then to just like stay a stalemate. Like, it wasn't the whole like, oh, we defeated everything and we are masters of the universe kind of situation. So I did appreciate that. And I did appreciate that at the end, they actually give a chance for Peggy Carter to be happy, because we find out that Steve Rogers is still in the
world.
What's it called? The Hydra Buster, I think it was the name of the suit or something like that. Yeah. I mean, we'll see. Yeah. That's what season two hopefully like starts addressing too. It's just like, okay, what are the consequences now of like everyone
of everything that happened,
witnessed the multiverse? So it's definitely like, that's the cool thing about Marvel. It's like, hey, we're going to continue, and these stories are going to, you know, keep unraveling and, you know, getting more and more complicated as the shows and movies progress, which I respect from Marvel, because 10 years ago, they would not have been able to do that, because all the normies would not have been able to follow up. But now Marvel's just like, we own this. So it's like, if you're not on this bandwagon, the train is going to leave town. We're leaving the station. We're taking you with us. So kudos to them for
Quantum Station.
Taking this to Quantum Station. Kudos to them for this quantum attempt at movie making, which is completely different, right, from what DC is doing. Because even though DC is also doing the multiverse, they're doing it completely different way, which I think is very clever for them, considering the state of their films, right? Films and TV shows, right? Right, yeah. Now, which if everyone that's not living under a rock didn't know, DC fandom, it was this weekend.
Yeah.
And just like last year, because of COVID, they had the event virtually again, so that, you know, everyone across the world could be able to participate and watch all the cool panel reveals without having to be physically there. So everyone was socially distanced for this, which was really cool thing. A couple of things premiered there that were really fun. A lot of things I think were still things that were talked about last year, but we finally got to see like more footage of it this time around. And we're not going to talk about everything because we don't have time for everything, but three particular things came out that I think were kind of the highlight for us. And it's obviously,
let's see.
Please remind me once I finish, but Black Adam, The Flash, and Batman. What was the fourth one?
And Aquaman.
One? Aquaman. They didn't show anything from Aquaman. Just a couple of stills, right? They didn't show a trailer for that.
No trailer.
Well, yeah, they showed some like making of things, and you know, the gorgeous Jason Momoa. So that's always good.
Yeah.
But
so the black suit, I think they showed.
Jason Momoa is always more is good.
More is good. More Jason Momoa is always good. More. I think there was some Shazam too, but I don't particularly care that much about Shazam.
You didn't like the first Shazam?
Is Shazam the same as Black Adam? Like, why are there?
They're from the same universe.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So Black Adam is the bad guy, the main bad guy of the Shazam.
Of Shazam
storytelling. Yeah.
Gotcha.
So that's why their uniforms are the same, because they're the same magic basically. Yeah. Okay.
So they like.
So it. which is one thing that, like, you know, I like The Rock. Don't get me wrong. I think he's been in way too many things lately. But this one role, though, I was like, okay. Once they announced that he was casting it, I'm like, okay, this will work. Casting, yeah, yep. It's like, I'm okay with The Rock, Dwayne Johnson trying to be the hero and everything, but I'm more in that he's the bad guy.
Yeah.
And so, and this first look at Black Adam was so satisfying. I'm like, yes, he's got the physicality. It felt sinister. It felt fresh and exciting. And, you know, seeing the cast too, Pierce Brosnan as Dr. Fate.
Wait to see that.
Sign me up. Oh, yeah, exactly.
Dr. Fate. I was just like, holy crap. I'm so excited to see that.
Yeah, but yes, Mo, his face. Oh, my God. What a beautiful mustache does that man have.
Oh, yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, yeah.
He ages like wine. I think he looks better now as an older gentleman than he did when he started James Bond.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think he'd be a better James Bond now, like the older one, like kind of.
Funny that you should mention that. I was talking to some friends of mine the other day after watching the last James Bond, and we were saying that it would be cool if they started just doing like anthology James Bonds, and kind of instead of casting like a new James Bond right away.
Older ones.
Yeah. And it's just like, hey, bring back Pierce Brosnan and give him a good send off, because his last James Bond movie, That Another Day,
was terrible.
Terrible, yeah. Terrible, that was terrible movie.
I know.
So bring him back as an old grizzled James Bond and give him a last hurrah. And Timothy Dalton, Roger Moore is dead. I think Timothy Dalton is still around. Bring him back too. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Bring the old timers.
Make it happen.
Oh yeah, but I'm definitely very excited to see Pierce Brosnan as Dr. Fate. I think Dwayne Johnson might actually be really good as Black Adam. And I really love that they're not trying to make it. They're keeping the whimsical, like they're keeping the suit exactly like it's supposed to look like. And the concept art that's coming out already looks like really, really comic booky and fantastic. So I remember when they first announced it, I think last year, and they only had concept art. And I was like, I don't know if I care that much. But with the new stuff that we just found out, I was like, ooh, that looks really good.
Looks good.
Right. And I think the cool thing with how they're approaching all of this now, in terms of like having everything be part of the DC multiverse, and like all the animes, all the TV shows, all the movies, everything's in some continuity in some way or another. So they can like pick and choose like how they're going to connect things, if they like it or not. Like Michael Keaton's Batman. We'll talk about it a little bit more in a couple minutes. But Michael Keaton's Batman is back. They want to bring back, I mean, Val Kilmer can't come back technically. I mean, I guess they could. But they want to bring him back. They can bring him back. You know, they can pick, they can pick and choose and do whatever they want, which I think it's very cool in terms of that freedom. Right. Big Adam West, bring him back. Bring him back too.
Oh my God.
Adam West alive?
No, he's very dead. Okay. But,
I'm like, what?
But it's cool because then you don't have to tie yourself into continuity and canon. You can do whatever. And if it didn't work, you can ignore it. If it worked, bring it up. So, which is completely different, right, from what Marvel's doing, right?
Yeah, but it is how comics work. Like, comics will do, and especially DC, they've traditionally done like, oh, we're doing the New 52. Oh, scratch that. Now we're doing this. Oh, no, and now everything actually works. And, you know, that happens in comic books all the time. And I get how it has worked for Marvel so far, but I like that DC's kind of now trying to do its own thing, because I think one of the reasons that DC failed is because they were trying so hard to copy what Marvel was doing and then rushing it. And it doesn't necessarily need to apply. Like, just try and do your own thing. I mean, one of the thought of as one of the most ridiculous characters, most made fun of characters, that is Aquaman, has been the most successful DC movie of all time.
And because it didn't take itself seriously. And they cast Jason Momoa. The Momoa effect.
Yeah. But it is the most kind of ridiculed character. And then DC has like two of the biggest characters of all time, which is obviously Batman and Superman, and they can never seem to get them right.
Well, and Batman they do, though. Let's be fair. Batman has had mostly good movies. Both Keaton movies, all the Christopher Nolan ones.
I have my issues with the Christopher Nolan ones, I have to say.
That's another episode, apparently.
That's another episode.
Because I think Batman Begins, amazing. Dark Knight, perfect movie. Dark Knight Rises has its issues, but it's still a good movie.
We can talk about Batman's later, but the Val Kilmer one was terrible, and George Clooney one was like toilet. So
guilty pleasure. They're terrible, but I love to hate them. And I had all the toys growing up. Batman Forever gave me the best Batmobile toy in the history of humanity.
Oh, that was a cool one. Yeah, because it kind of lit up from the inside.
No, that was the George Clooney one, but the Val Kilmer one, since that, in that movie you had like the bat boat and the bat ship and all that stuff, like the Batmobile like had removable pieces so you can turn it into all the different Batmobile configurations.
Fine.
So thank you, Val Kilmer. You were not a good Batman, but you gave me the best Batmobile toy.
But anyway, so now that we're talking about the Michael Keaton Batman movies, I mean, we'd all heard the rumors that he was coming back, blah blah blah, but then the trailer for Flash comes out, and who's narrating the trailer?
I was surprised.
Michael Keaton.
I was so surprised. Did you expect them to just go all in and be like,
no,
fuck it, he's gonna start narrating it?
No,
I thought they would not have the balls.
It wasn't gonna happen.
No, I remember when I first watched it, I was just watching it from the cell phone because it was like my cousin's wedding. And I was like, it's out. And just listening to it, I was like, holy shit, Michael Keaton is narrating the trailer? Like, we give zero fucks. We're doing this right. Goosebumps, huge. It's like, I'm not that big a fan of Flash. And I have my issues with Ezra as the character. So we'll see how they deal with that. So I wasn't that excited. But as soon as Michael Keaton narrating. And then you get these, because
Wayne Manor, come on.
Wayne Manor, the actual back end, like you hear the steps and then you see, because everybody's like ears, Batman ears are different. So you're like, this is the Michael Keaton Batcave. This is the Michael Keaton head. This is, they actually added in, if you pay attention, some notes from like Tim Burton's original score for those films.
Yes.
So that's like in there, and I was like, holy shit, this is so good. And then obviously at the end, when you see like the Batmobile under the carp and it's the shape, and you know it's the Michael Keaton.
It's like
Batmobile.
And I like that they didn't show it, but it's just like, we're gonna give you enough and you're almost gonna see it, but nope.
But no,
gotta wait.
And then you hear Flash be like, holy shit.
But the only bad thing Gomo.
I was gonna say my fear is, do I have to watch like the Flash now to get there? Like...
To just get to Michael Keaton.
Yeah.
That's I mean, you're hitting the point that I was gonna, you know, talk about. It's weird that the Flash trailer, the most talked about thing was Batman and not the Flash.
Yeah.
No surprise there.
You know. No surprise, but like in a marketing standpoint, like it doesn't matter because you get the views, but I don't know. Yeah. For me, if I were making like a Flash movie, and even if I am going to include like these super legacy characters, like I want to play them a little more close to the chest so that my main character is still the protagonist instead of like everything's about Michael Keaton. Because one of the cool things from the trailer that was also kind of background stuff that I don't know if you noticed, I didn't notice until, you know, reading the dozens of articles online, was that one of the
analysis.
One of the versions of the Flash that was there, his Flash costume was actually a repurposed Michael Keaton Batman suit, and he just like painted red and had like all the stuff painted over it. And I'm like, that's cool. See, maybe you would have leaned on a bit of that more, because it's the Flash but built out of Batman. That way it's still about the Flash but homaging Michael Keaton, obviously, and then when the movie comes out, boom, Michael Keaton 100%. But keep it about the Flash, you know, it's his movie. We don't,
Is it confirmed it's Batman, or could it be like the Thomas Wayne Batman from?
No, it's.
We don't know yet. I don't think, because
it's Michael Keaton's 89 Batman.
But could it be, you know, that kind of like that?
I think Flashpoint, because I think they're, it sounds like they're mixing different things, because it does look like it's Flashpoint Paradox, because it's the whole going back to,
it's going to be on it too. Yeah.
And I had thought, especially when they did, when they brought in, I forget the actor's name, the comedian,
Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
Yeah. As Thomas Wayne. I was like, if they do Flashpoint him as Thomas Wayne Batman, who's like dark as fuck and fantastic,
yeah, that would be awesome.
He would be amazing if that would happen. So it looks like they're mixing, you know, Flashpoint with multiverse at the same time, because if you're keeping, I mean, if Michael Keaton is just coming back as like his version of Bruce Wayne Batman, then that's not the same thing as Flashpoint. And then clearly they're doing like different versions of the Flash, so it sounds more like a multiverse take on it. That
Supergirl was
because
in there
he
too.
Tried it. Because he was trying to trigger Flashpoint, but it did something differently. So they're not keeping straight to the Flashpoint paradox story. Yeah. So
I mean, I do want to definitely see Jeffrey Dean Morgan as a Thomas Wayne, because that would be just...
And Thomas Wayne Batman, because
that
would
be
version
brutal,
of...
brutal and awesome. Oh, yeah. And we could, maybe it's their best kept secret, because we do know that Michael Keaton Batman is back, and we know that Ben Affleck Batman is also back in this movie.
Yeah, maybe those are red herrings, and then we'll have like a bigger reveal somewhere else.
Exactly. So
I don't know. Yeah,
so that's a cool thing. It's just like Flash is just going crazy. It's like, let's lean into the the weird parts of Flash, which is all the time travel stuff, and not so much like, oh, I'm just saving people running fast, which is cool too, but I think leaning into this makes the movie more special and distinct from a lot of the other things out there.
So hopefully they just don't turn the Flash into a gag, and they actually follow the story through, because adding all these people together, and if you do it well, it could possibly be really, really good. So here's hoping. I mean,
here's hoping.
And especially, I mean, what were you gonna say?
I was gonna say, like, I'm also like hesitant, because this feels like DC's reaction.
I noticed.
Like DC's reaction to like the whole like, ooh, the Spider-Verse is coming together. So it almost, I'm getting like just fear that, you know,
Marvel again.
Like Marvel is uniting all the Spideys. Let's unite all the Batmans, and we'll actually say it beforehand. Like
a bad verse.
the bad verse. I mean, not again, nothing wrong. We all want more.
Nothing wrong with it. Yeah. As long as you do it right. But I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
I get that's not what they're doing.
I'm not.
But I get it.
You know, I don't, at this moment, I'm I don't trust DC. I mean, it's you know, they have to regain it back.
Yeah, they're batting. They don't have a good average right now. They're not even batting a 500. They're probably batting like 250 or something.
Well, I really love Aquaman. I wasn't expecting for myself to love it.
That was fun.
I hope the second one keeps it up and like doesn't shy away from it being kind of ridiculous, because Aquaman is definitely ridiculous. So just keep it going. Yeah.
I want to see Aquaman. You can definitely like, tell. The dolphins.
Well, I think they kind of showed him riding the seahorse.
Yeah, he was riding the seahorse, but he needs to.
I want to see the shout. I want to see like
the actual the dolphin shout.
Yes.
I just want my hope, in all honesty, is that Aquaman 2 doesn't go the way of Wonder Woman 2, because mm-hmm. Wonder Woman 1 was so good, and then Wonder Woman 2 was just like, what the hell happened to this?
Yeah. So Wonder Woman 1, I think, has been one of the best DC films. I loved Wonder Woman 1.
Of
the modern ones. And because I do really, really love, especially the Tim Burton Batmans. I love them. But Wonder Woman was unexpectedly good, the first one, and then the second one. Yeah. Like, even if you like kept it at the same, it would have been fantastic, but it was so cringe. The second one was like, it was even hard to watch, honestly. Yeah. I might try to give it a second chance and try to rewatch it to see if maybe it aged better, but it was so bad.
It's just weird. I mean,
I'm still trying
it's just to a weird it movie. It's very long. It's very long too, and it doesn't long. Make it's sense. It's just like, wait, what's this?
What?
Like, I understand that every sophomore superhero movie, the superhero has to lose his powers because he wants to live a normal life and blah, 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 blah. I get that. But this one was just did in such a ham-fisted way.
It was nonsensical. That,
and then like the stakes were just weird because the magic talisman is like, wait, but the rope couldn't get through to Pedro Pascal because of the wind, but then it did because the plot needed it. It's like, what?
Yeah.
Why are you breaking your own rules? I don't know. And it was campy, but serious at the same time. It's just like, choose a tone. Either go full camp, like Aquaman. Yeah. Aquaman was campy as shit, and it worked. Or be serious, like Wonder Woman, the first one. Serious, it worked.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't be campy. I don't know. It was the shifts in tones. It's just weird. Although, I have to be fair, Pedro Pascal was amazing. You can tell that he gave it his heart and soul into it.
Yeah. For a character that was just badly written. And
But he was amazing. Yeah.
Oh, because Pedro Pascal is hello.
Pedro Pascal.
Yeah.
He was having fun, and pay that man millions of dollars. Keep paying him.
Keep paying them.
So I think the other big one, because we've been talking about Michael Keaton Batman, but now we have the Batman.
The Batman. Holy crap. What a good trailer.
Batman.
It was a good trailer. It was really interesting. I like that, you know, we finally are steering away from, Batman is a sane person. Like, no, Batman is equally as mentally disturbed as everybody else. It's just that Batman's way of canalizing his aggression against anybody.
Justice
and vengeance. Like...
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so good when he says that. Ooh.
I am vengeance. Way better than, I'm sorry, the...
Do you bleed?
No, I'm Batman. I'm constipated all the time and I need to
talk. Oh, the Christian Bale voice.
Oh, God. It drove me insane.
I'm okay with it. I did like the robotic voice that they did for Batfleck. I think that was a cool twist on it too. It's just like, I have a modulator. That's cool. But I
all these Batmans are a lot.
Yeah. I was very apprehensive about Batfleck, but he won me over.
Really, like,
I was really looking forward to it.
To see him like a full film.
In a solo film. Yeah.
Yeah. There was something really cool that about Batfleck, not only that, you know, you have this like older Bruce Wayne, which I really like
physicality too, as you know.
Yeah, the fact that he was able, because I think he's been the only one that has successfully been able to pull off both characters, both Bruce Wayne and Batman.
Yeah.
And the way that his action scenes were, you know, choreographed and everything that he does, it's like, you know, it's like the big Batman, how he's supposed to be, like, wide and everything. And
because he doesn't have superpowers, so he has to be like a mountain.
And then the way he would react and the way he would actually use, like, the batarangs and all of his, you know, toys was very reminiscent of how it looked like in the cartoons and in all the things, like the first time that it really looked like Batman fighting. So I was really sad that we never got like a full-fledged, you know, Ben Affleck Batman film, because I think it would have been great. Missed opportunities. But
this, we don't know.
This Matt Reeves version, though, like Matt Reeves who directed like the Planet of the Apes films. Awesome. And like one of the things that I like about the vibe of the movie is that it's very noir and very thriller mystery type of thing. So like it's, and because the villain is the Riddler, I really hope that the movie leans into more of the Batman as a detective and trying to discover the plot and the mystery more so than Batman just in an action film, which don't get me wrong, I love Batman beating criminals to a pulp with his bare fists, but I like Batman the detective, the smart, you know, the smartest man in the world. Like I need to see that Batman.
It's coming number one.
Exactly. So like the vibes I got is that we might get it. And I love
it is
I love Gollum as Alfred too. I don't know.
Andy Serkis, and then because when he was first announced, I was like, yes. And then we actually got to see him like doing it, I was like, yes, some more. Even though I loved Gary Oldman as Commissioner Gordon, so I'm gonna miss, you know, having Gary Oldman as Commissioner
Gordon. Jeffrey Wright looks awesome too as Commissioner Gordon.
I know, so it's like these changes are like Jeffrey Wright looks amazing, Andy Serkis as Alfred looks amazing. I mean, I'm actually really excited. I thought Zoe Kravitz as Catwoman looked
perfect.
Because like, I mean, me, she really does feel like
she has like the vibe of all of them. I feel like she had like the leather from Michelle Pfeiffer, like the swagger of Anne Hathaway. So she's like an amalgamation, I think, of all the previous Catwomen we've seen before.
Because there was something about the Anne Hathaway one that even though I thought she was awesome, she didn't feel like Selena Kyle to me. There was something off there. And I talked to Josbando, we have this conversation all the time. He's like, oh, that's just because you're in love with Michelle Pfeiffer and blah, blah, blah. I was like, well, Michelle Pfeiffer, but there was something really cool about Zoe Kravitz's like interpretation of it. It is like a combination of them. So I'm looking forward to see how they do that. And then, you know, and then you have all these like iconic characters that I hope they don't overuse, because then you can have, because you have, you know, Carmine Falcone, and then you have the Penguin, that's Colin Farrell. And
then it does not look anything like him, so kudos to the makeup team.
And then obviously you have the Riddler, who's supposed to be like the main one, and still have never seen the Riddler, which is a good thing that they're keeping it like under wraps, and you just see the question mark. And it's,
I like that he's like the Zodiac killer, but you know, Batmanified basically.
And I hope they take it that way, because of, you know, the Riddler being the main bad guy, it being like a psychological thriller kind of detective film. And especially if you're doing, because I think this is supposed to be like Batman Year One, which is like when he's full like detective mode and really, you know, dark and aggressive. So the tone actually works for this type of Batman film. My problem a little bit was that I think they just made Bruce Wayne look too emo.
I think it's just because the hair's so black.
Emo?
I think I was thinking about that right before we started recording, because it's not because of what's his face? Oh my God, I forgot his name.
Robert Pattinson.
Thank you. It's not because of Robert Pattinson, because I mean, in other films, he looks awesome. I mean, I was thinking about when he was not Interstellar, the last Christopher Nolan film. In the last Christopher Nolan film. The one with the time travel Denzel,
which was actually
Tenet. There we go. In Tenet, I think he had like a better Bruce Wayne swagger in that film than like he is sporting in the Batman. Because, like you said, I think with the black hair and like just combed
like greased
over,
out and like
was like, I'm not feeling the Bruce Wayne, obviously. I need to see the movie to see if it works, because I don't want to judge it. I've been, you know, with Batfleck, I did the same mistake of judging it before the movie. And then I saw it. I'm like, damn it, this is the best part of the movie. Yeah. The thing I thought I was going to hate. So we'll see, but I agree. Absolutely. Yeah,
because I definitely got some like Tobey Maguire third Spider-Man three.
Well, I think this is just speculation. They actually went with the black hair to avoid any like, oh, Batman is Twilight kind of thing.
I could absolutely see that, but I think it just went too far.
I remember like the forums being like, oh, great, now we got Twilight on Batman. Like,
well, everybody complained
about that. Haters gonna hate always.
Ben Affleck kind of blew everybody's mind because I think Ben Affleck was
fantastic. Fans complained about Michael Keaton also back in the 80s was cast, even before the internet. So, like, you know,
it's like, why are you a fan? Like, why are you just complaining? Like,
exactly. Like, don't you want more movies? It's like, come on.
Yeah.
Just watch it.
Yeah.
But I
guess we'll wait and see. But there was something really cool about the trailer in that there was like this really good harmony of like the soundtrack with like everything that's going on in the background. So like even in the trailer already, it gets me excited. So I really hope that they can pull it off, because I was kind of not wanting Batman to continue like through this like dark hole that, you know, DC always likes to make everything dark and tortured and blah blah blah, but if you really are trying to stay to the story of like Batman Year One, it actually makes sense. So they have a chance to, you know, make it dark but believable, like not dark on purpose, like actually dark because it fits the story,
right?
So we'll see.
And I've seen some rumors online, I don't know how true this is, and since I'm not a big comic book buff, so maybe now you can correct me on this, but there's a lot of like rumors that the vibe of the movie with how it's going with the Riddler and Penguin and Falcone and this whole mystery thing is that maybe it's kind of leading into a Court of Owls situation where like, he's unraveling all the mystery and it's actually the Court of Owls that's behind everything. And like, I don't know what the hell that was until like I saw the Arkham Knights trailer, and then I saw that there's also the Court of Owls in that game, so I'm like, well, I guess I need to Wikipedia this now. And then I was like, oh, this is interesting, a new direction for Batman films that we haven't seen before.
A lot of the animated, like DC has really good animated films about like almost all of its characters. There's a lot of really good like Superman ones and Justice League ones and Batman ones. There's some really, really good Batman ones, and they're all on HBO Max. So I would suggest go into it, and they have some really good ones with like the Court of Owls and like Batman's son, Damian Wayne. And there's like a lot of really cool stuff in there. So I would just like recommend going into it, because even though DC has quote unquote in general failed with the live action stuff, like they have some hits here and there depending on who directs it, but in general, come on, we have to know that it doesn't compare to what Marvel's been able to do. But
animation style, they've always been up top,
but in animation they have some really, really good stories that are usually really faithful to the comics, so you can actually catch up with the stories. And there's a new season of Young Justice out too that's running on HBO Max, which is also really, really good. So I would recommend anybody that really loves DC or wants to know about it and thinks the films are maybe not up to par, just go to HBO Max. They have a library of films there that are just really, really good.
Nice.
So
that's good homework for everybody. Different type of homework than the one that he's doing now, but definitely more fun.
I appreciate it kind of homework.
Exactly. But I think though we covered the big 4 points. Thanks, Mo, for correcting me. That we had Aquaman to talk about. The big 4 points of DC fandom. Let's go for it.
Yes. The Sandman. We didn't get much. Gwendolyn Christie is going to be Lucifer, which is, I think, is going to be right on point. But I'm excited.
Is that going to be a show or a movie?
It's going to be I think it's a Netflix series. The Neil
Gaiman
is actually involved in the whole series, and it's probably one of the best graphic novels out there. I recommend everybody to go check it out. But, you know, hopefully when this season comes, it'll be as amazing as it is. Again, it's DC. I'm a little bit scared, but.
Yeah, and graphic novels sometimes have issues getting translated correctly.
Yeah, especially the magnitude of like what each like person is in the Sandman. Like it's, you know, we're dealing with like eternal beings, which I'm not sure if, you know, they'll be able to represent it well. I'm glad they steered away from. So there's a show, Lucifer.
Yeah.
Which is a spinoff of the Sandman, actually.
Okay.
Oh, really? Because that tone doesn't. I mean, I don't know much about that, Sandman, but the tone of that show doesn't fit what I think the tone of Sandman is.
No. Mm-hmm. So it's a spinoff, but it completely deviated from what it was. Mm. But the tone and the story. Because in the story in the Sandman, Lucifer just gets bored of hell and just comes to Earth to. Mm. Live a human life. Like
I don't blame him. I get bored of being at home for a couple of hours. I can only imagine him for centuries.
Brienne as Lucifer. I can't wait. I mean,
it kind of brings back the vibes that Constantine had with both mm-hmm. Lucifer and Gabriel.
Yes.
This whole like weird. Agenderless, beautiful being that
you're. Hey, come on, Tilda Swinton.
Oh, yeah,
beautiful.
She's like that. She was like the David Bowie of acting, basically.
Yes.
They were the same. Maybe they were the same person. Maybe. I'm not saying that they are, but I'm saying they haven't said they aren't.
It's a possibility.
If people believe QAnon, this is not that far off.
I know.
So five things.
The gift that keeps on giving.
And this DC Super Pets. There's gonna be an animated movie on Super Pets.
Six things. And The Rock is gonna be in that one too.
And The Rock is gonna be in that one correctly. We're living in the Rockiverse.
Yeah. Oh,
well, we also have a Peacemaker show too.
And Peacemaker.
But after Suicide Squad, like I'm just like not. I watched the trailer
and I was like, that has like. A possibility of actually being good because it looks so ridiculous actually be good. I was like, who knows?
I'll check it out, but that might be
like the only thing that saves it. It's like, it's so ridiculous. I mean,
it's
come on,
so
like,
ridiculous. Yeah.
Hugging the like, Peacemaker. Like,
yeah,
it's not ridiculous. Like, so maybe, who knows? Maybe that's, but I'm not a fan of John Cena. So,
I know.
I think he's. I mean, I'm not a fan of wrestling, so like, I don't have a relationship with John Cena. Yeah. But everything I've seen of him as a person, he seems like fun. So
when he tried to act, he was like kind of terrible. I did think he did a better job as Peacemaker. So going into this role in a series that's kind of ridiculous might not actually be the worst thing. So, mm-hmm. I don't know.
And it makes sense. Like, wrestling is kind of ridiculous. So, they know how to act ridiculousness.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. So, I think if they do it right, it could turn out being something that really darkly funny, which I'm completely okay with. So, there's a possibility there. I guess we'll, you know, find out, you know, when it comes out. There's a lot of stuff with a lot of promise. So, DC, come on, please. I've always wished for your success. I love DC characters so much. Not to say that I don't love Marvel, because I also do, but I grew up loving DC more. So come on, just live up to your potential.
Yeah.
But you know what? Kudos to DC. They, like, Marvel has like this whole like Apple treatment unveiling, like, oh, we brainstorm and we give you this, the final product, and you love us for it.
Yeah.
DC, it's like it's more like engaging. Like this has been like a conversation.
You're growing up with them because you see them fail. Yeah. So you have to see them pick themselves up and try again. So you're like rooting for them. They're the underdogs. Like, come on, you can do it.
It's like reinvention. Let's try this again. Let's see how this works.
Yeah, we're basically Rob Schneider and the rooting on for DC and DC's Adam Sandler. So it's like, you can do it. Come on. That's how it goes.
Well, I mean, so Marvel, hoping, keep
doing
really
what you're doing, and DC, yeah, you can do it.
You can do it.
You can do it. So, I mean, I think that's it for today. Unless any final thoughts? We're good.
We're good.
No, conclusion. What Mo just said. Marvel, keep doing what you're doing. We're going to continue to watch what you do. You have your formula down. DC, never give up. You can
never
do
surrender.
It. And if you can do it like your own thing and actually figure it out without all these rules and whatever, and it actually works, you could actually excel. So here's hoping that some of this new awesome stuff that we're starting to get doesn't disappoint. Because every time I feel like my heart dies a little bit every time something DC.
We're gluttons for pain, that's for sure.
I know. Well, we're Star Wars fans, aren't we?
That's true.
So to end that on a Star Wars note. We are Triad of the Force. Thank you for joining us. You can find us on Twitter, on Instagram, anywhere that podcast can be found. Just search for Triad of the Force. We have shirts. We are very close to reaching 150 followers on YouTube. So, you know, hit the subscribe.
Just do it.
Hit the like. Give us some comments. If you don't like the content that we're giving out, then, you know, give us suggestions. So I think until next time, may the Force be with you.